While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to all our listeners across the country and beyond our borders. Thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM. That is the home of informed conversations and credible national dialogue. I'm yours, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are tuned into On The Reading News Analysis, the program where the day's headlines are examined within their full national, social, and economic context. It is Tuesday, the 10th of February 2026. Now, as Namibia navigates the early weeks of the new year, public focus remains firmly rooted on issues of governance, accountability, economic resilience, and community well-being. Now, right here on the Radar, we go beyond surface level reporting. We unpack policy decisions, interrogate their implications, and examine how national developments translate into the everyday lived experiences of Namibians, from urban centers to remote rural communities. Now, in a media landscape increasingly shaped by speed and competing narratives, On the Radar remains committed to depth, balance, and clarity. Our approach prioritizes context-driven analysis that connects policy, power, and the people. Now, without wasting any time, let's get right into our conversation today. Joining me in studio now, telephonically, is Mr. Anurag, Prof. Anurag from Vilvicha University. A very good afternoon to you, Prof, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis. I'll be back shortly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Now, joining me telephonically now is from the Vilvicha University's Professor Marvin Anurag. A very good afternoon to you, Prof, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis yet again.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me.
Now, you have some interesting news that you have to tell us today in regards to the Ongwediva Achievers 2026 NSCO Boost Program. Kindly get into it for us.
Good afternoon, and as introduced, I am Prof. Anurag. I am the Dean of the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education here at Vilvicha University. And it is my honor and privilege this afternoon to take the listeners through what we have in our faculty. Now, as per our slogan, we say everyone is an achiever. We have a list of programs that reflects this slogan. Under our faculty, we have a wide spectrum of courses. For those interested in commerce, we have certificates, diplomas, and bachelor's both in science, in project management, as well as supply chain. In the School of Education, we are offering a diploma in legal studies, as well as the Bachelor of Law, which is a program for 5 years. And then in education, we have bachelor's degrees, both for senior primary as well as senior secondary, for those majoring in math and science.
Mm-hmm. So get also into more details into how this program helps grade 11 students upgrade from NSCO results through targeted classes in key subjects.
Okay, so for those who have completed their grade 11 but have not obtained the required symbols to get into the bachelor's degree or any university program, can register with us. We have for specific subjects where they can register with us, and then they'll be able to write exams at the end of the year, and then once they have upgraded their master's, they can then get into the university.
Okay, now which subjects can students improve on?
We have got the languages, we have got math and science.
Mm-hmm.
So any of those programs, they can just make an application and then they can improve their results.
Okay, and how does the program support learners? Prof, are you still with me? Hello? It looks like I'm losing him. Let's pause here for now and we'll be back shortly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngino wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite ofoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa mbora etatu natu mbali o etatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM. The eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
In the meantime, let's get into other stories as we await to actually roll out that one correctly. Now, South Africa is confronting its most severe and widespread foot and mouth disease, also known as FMD, outbreak in decades now, with infections confirmed in 8 of the country's 9 provinces, placing the livestock industry under immense strain and sending shockwaves across the regional trade networks. Now, the outbreak, which has persisted since 2019 and intensified sharply from 2021, is driven primarily by the SAT2 strain of the virus, a highly transmittable variant affecting cloven hoofed animals, including cattle, sheep, goats, and pigs. Now, by mid-2025, authorities had recorded more than 270 outbreaks, many of them in key commercial farming areas. Now, this has dealt a significant blow to South Africa's 80 billion rand livestock sector, disrupting production, restricting animal movement, and triggering trade bans from major regional and international markets, which include China, Namibia, and Zimbabwe. Now, the scale of the crisis has raised concerns, serious concerns actually, across Southern Africa, given South Africa's central role in regional livestock supply chains. Now, against this backdrop, South Africa has taken an active step towards strengthening its disease response capacity. On the 6th of February 2026, the Agricultural Research Council, also known as ARC, announced the successful production of an initial batch of 12,900 multi-strain FMD vaccine doses, marking the resumption of local vaccine manufacturing for the first time since 2005. Now, local production had been suspended more than two decades ago due to obsolete infrastructure and outdated technology at the Ondersport Veterinary Institute, which no longer met international quality and biosafety standards. Now, as a result, South Africa became fully dependent on imported vaccines, limiting its ability to respond rapidly to outbreaks. Now, according to the ARC, the revival of production follows years of sustained research, government investment, and modernization of facilities in order to meet regulatory requirements. Now, the ARC production team member Faith Petter say the initial bench, though modest, demonstrates South Africa's renewed capacity to develop safe, effective vaccines tailored to local disease strains. And the first dose will be distributed to six provinces of the eight. Now, of course, let's get into this conversation with farmers. But we're going to start off with Ishmael Wandara, who is a farmer and a Namibian farmer, to also speak to us on what this means for Namibia and what Namibia can actually do or how we can best prepare ourselves in future in regards to this outbreak, because it does affect Namibia as well. And of course, this affects cross-border trade as well. And you know how much we've imported, how much beef and other food items that we do import from South Africa, hence why it's quite relevant. But let's keep trying to get hold of Ishmael.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi finawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fada Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Onora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Watatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Okay, then now we have gotten hold of Ishmael Wandara. A very good afternoon to you, Ishmael. And of course, Ishmael is a farmer as well as a project manager at Light Trailblazers Leadership Consultancies. A very good afternoon to you, Ishmael. And it's a pleasure to have you with us in studio.
Good afternoon. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Great to be on your show again.
Ishmael, indeed, we're talking about foot and mouth disease, which is affecting our neighboring country, and not just any neighboring country, but the country where we import a lot of our meat as well. Just from your perspective, before we even ask any questions, just get into what this actually means for the market and what this means also to Namibia.
Thank you once again. The farming market is similar to that of Forex trading market. When one side is negatively affected, another can also see a potential gain in that. So primarily now, this means that we can still export to them, to the areas that they are perhaps having camps or concentration, where they can keep the newly imported livestock separate so that they can still sell or maintain their meat market. However, to the South Africans internally, they cannot sell outside. So there is what they call the process of farm management segregation, where the segregation of the affected livestock is in tiers or levels. So there is a red zone where the disease is at its worst, and then there is a yellow side, and then gradually it becomes better.
Mm-hmm.
So we can still sell to South Africa, and then they can keep to the sites that are least affected. However, we can buy within the areas that are mainly affected.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Quite interesting. And it seems like yes, they are trying to contain it, but it seems like to be getting worse. How then are we perhaps also at risk? I mean, we're talking about regional borders. Are we at risk, and how perhaps Ishmael could we prepare?
Yeah, no, we are very much at risk because we are not far from each other. And if you also know that we have farmers who are neighboring South Africa, so the disease can move. Let's just imagine the COVID-19 situation. So the disease can move easily. However, synonymously, we can also best prepare before it hits Namibia Strait, because if your vaccines are up to date, if your kettles are in good shape, if the weak ones have already been removed from the stronger ones, the older ones are removed, then you are less likely to be negatively affected because your herd will have a type of herd immunity. Let's also not be too frightened, because it's not the first time that foot and mouth is coming into Namibia. Mm. That means the animals that came across it before have also developed a type of herd immunity. And then the previous vaccinations that we did can also guarantee a certain degree of defense. However, when it comes, the most detriment is not mainly the loss of livestock, because farmers have adapted ways to mitigate and cut that out. The major thing is the inability to sell. So perhaps to the farmer who is there within these few weeks, while we are, before we are declared an infected zone, we can still identify the livestock that are probably looking slightly weaker or older, and then we can target those ones to sell so that their income can help us to perhaps boost within our vaccinations, or so I may say that metabolic and others that can perhaps boost if your vaccines are up to date.
Interesting. And in light of this, also South Africa's Agricultural Research Council has announced the successful production of an initial batch of multi-strains, the 12,900 of those multi-strains vaccines. And I just also learned that prior to that, they were not allowed to make their own vaccines because we're not meeting international standards. Knowing this now, South Africa is now able to do that. Do you think perhaps maybe Namibia can also look into that matter? Maybe do we need to send officials over there to learn, and also then we be able to meet international standards and be able to produce our own vaccines? Obviously, it will cut down on buying, which would be more expensive perhaps than us in the long run producing our own vaccines. What do you think?
Yeah. No, most definitely. The breakthrough in South Africa is a breakthrough also to Namibia. I mean, if not 90% or more, all our vaccines, injections, supplements, they all basically come from South Africa. So a breakthrough to South Africa is definitely a positive impact to us. Mm. We have the capacity, we have the institutions in place that can propagate the necessary research to advance some, because there are also drugs and vaccines and treatments that are under study in Namibia. I'm not sure whether a major crisis or the vacuum is it funds or resources, or is it a perpetuating or a fast body they can really get the doses of vaccines recognized. We have sufficient livestock for a market for farmers to be able to support locally produced vaccines. So it is encouraged that perhaps we can go, we can send institutions like the Institution of Pathology, we can also send the School of Agriculture at UNAM and many other similar researching bodies to see where we can, because obviously if it is a South African vaccine, then it's already patent under them. But we can see what is lacking within our own so that we can really boost as a nation that has agriculture as a backbone. It's about time that we really start venturing into our own production, both for local consumption of vaccines and also for international export. I think it's long overdue, and we hope through this current administration, really a lot can happen within releasing a lot of breakthroughs within vaccine development. It is financially a complex process, but given where we are now and the budget that we have in Namibia, we could really do something about it. Yeah.
Interesting. Now, we have experienced some good rains, or perhaps I'm speaking that because I live in the capital city. what do you think good rain translates for farmers, and how do you perhaps forecast, although you are a farmer yourself? I know farmers also do sometimes forecast to say it's probably going to be a good year. We're going to yield some very good results or very good fruits. But yeah, what's your take on this year's rainfall?
I would really like to thank God for the rain. I think as a nation, we can agree that we have really transitioned from a difficult season of immense drought, unpredictable or unreliable rainfalls, to this splendid, wonderful flow of rain. It, in my area in Omaheke, we got rain since November into December. It was not big rains, but it was enough rains to be able to germinate the local grass, shrubs, and herbs, which our livestock depend on. So we entered because the previous years, by that time, you're already buying extra feed, dry soil concentrate, molasses, lucerne, and other type of boosters to ensure that these animals that are transitioning from the winter dry season have enough strength to welcome the new rains. However, with the early germination of last year, it guaranteed that our animals and livestock could go into the new year into strength, and that is the current status. So it is such a blessing. But also with blessings, there are also challenges. Within a lot of rain, there's a lot of wetness. That means a lot of insects get to breed, and small viruses and infections also get to roam about. So that is another thing maybe for us to be aware of. But the rain, to some areas, it has, as I said, has been able to positively impact the pastures, but it has not been sustained reliable rain as when it comes to crops. Remember, we also have some crops activities happening in the eastern part of the Maika region, which is closer to Ace Block. However, we could not rely on the rain patterns because it would be extreme heat 1 week and then some patches of rain in the other season, in the following week. So that was not very reliable or sustainable to people who are depending on the rain as a source of watering their crops. However, to livestock, I think as a nation, and I've traveled extensively. I traveled as far as the Maruru area, even before when the rain was approaching, the pastures were already good. Maruru was, for Imadi, was one of the hardest hit area concerning this long drought period. And now the farmers in Maruru are rejoicing again. So really, there's a new trajectory in how this rain, we hope it can last for the next 20 years or so before we really need to readjust. Is good patterns of birth rates that we're also seeing with these new rains. There's only one small virus that I've heard of emerging that normally moves through mosquitoes. And for that, farmers are really encouraged now to update your vaccinations, to update your vaccine boosters, and to really keep an open eye of observation until we are into a much drier season. But really, let's rejoice. Let's go back into buying livestock. To sum up what you just asked now, as I said, that when there's a crisis in one area of farming, there's an opportunity to another area. So now that there will be challenges of people selling shoot, the disease persists in South Africa. Those who are looking forward to venturing into farming, this is a season where you prepare your funds so that when people start selling in desperation, because then the market price will also crash, and people will be forced to sell. So once you have your ducks in a row, then you'll become the next emerging farmer, and you'll be able to buy from the people who are under pressure. Let's try and minimize the number of livestock we have. Let's not be too greedy because of the rain. Let's keep quality over quantity. I think, yeah, without being too lengthy, I think that is how I can best sum that.
Short, precise, and to the point. Ishmael Wandara, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the radar. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I wish the farmers a productive and fruitful year. Let's put our hands really on the plow and let's not look back. Let's not be afraid of taking risks. Let's accept losses as part of the farming process.
I have a commercial break, Ishmael. It's going to cut you off.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Ishmael, you're busy giving out your last words.
Thank you very much for having me. You know, I was saying that this is a productive and fruitful year. I can envisage it as that. For me, it's a year of impact and purposeful living. So let's put our hands to the plow. Let's not look back. Let's take new forms of investment. If you are doing cattle, add some sheep and chicken and maybe a few rabbits there. Let's explore even fish farming. Let's not only stick to one system of farming, but let's try and diversify so that we can have multiple streams of income so that when one area is severely hit, you can still sustain your farming activities with the other. So I wish the farmers a strong and productive year. Let's not look back. Let's not give up. Let's not be discouraged. Let's be open to learning new methodologies, new systems of adaptation. Let's try new crops. Let's try better and greater things this year. The season of farming has started again.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ismail.
All right.
Okay. And that was Ismail Wandara. But now let's get hold of another farmer and let's hear from them as well.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Okay, and we are back again. Now joining, we are back again and now joining us telephonically in studio is Mr. Erastus Garuka, and he is the Agribank Technical Advisor, Livestock and Ridge Land Management. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Erastus, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Yes, thank you for having me and greetings to all, to you and the listeners.
We're talking about South Africa's livestock or severe widespread of foot and mouth disease, which has become worse than has ever been in decades. And yeah, knowing that Namibia is in close proximity with South Africa, and of course that Namibia, by that I mean, of course, that the fact that we import from South Africa as well. Could this perhaps affect us here in Namibia?
Yes, very much. You know, when you're talking of livestock diseases, there are diseases that carried by viruses and so forth, and these viruses can also spread via different modes. Can be through transportation of animals, or even people moving in between, or even vehicles, especially for, in particular with foot and mouth disease. So the virus can be spread in any form, be it with people or the trucks or the vehicles and so forth, or even by air or direct contact of animals. Yeah, so Namibia is at risk and is surrounded by a risk. The fact that South Africa has been battling with the disease for more than 5 years or so, and then Botswana also recently reported cases. Yeah, and again, here in Namibia, up in the northern regions, in Zambezi, for example, we are also battling with FMD, but at least we are managing to contain it in those infected zones. So, but generally, talking about our neighbors and also the risk that is Namibia is facing, we are really in a difficult situation, even though we don't have to panic, but we really have to be on alert.
What can Namibia...
Yeah, continue.
What can Namibia perhaps do to ensure that we don't end up in the same situation that South Africa is in right now? How do we best contain this FMD and prevent it from actually wild spreading? Imagine if it spread to about 8 provinces of South Africa. How do we best contain it?
Yeah, I think maybe the difference between Namibia and South Africa is in terms of the disease control protocols. Probably the adherence may be different, or I would say Namibia is more stricter than South Africa, or probably there could have been some loopholes in the system in South Africa where farmers maybe could transport animals or move animals unknowingly and so forth. But at least here in Namibia, we have control protocols or disease control protocols where movement permits have to be requested, and then again we have a traceability system. So I think in that way we have been on a good side, and now that there's a risk coming, I think this level, the level of security or alert is now on a high level. So meaning the movement of animals and the restriction of byproducts will be more stricter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the good thing is that we have systems in place already. It's just a matter of strengthening them. Mm. And also remembering that we have been maintaining a very high standard in terms of maintaining our markets, the export markets. So that is one factor that is keeping us on our toes, because we don't want to lose such a market. So every farmer knows the value that those export markets have.
Yeah.
And our government is also in full support of that. So it's trying to make sure that everyone adheres to whatever measures should be placed. So I think we need to really follow what the government, the protocols that are being placed in front of us.
Mm. Would you say farmers are well educated enough, or perhaps there needs to be more? I appreciate how you allude to the fact that Namibia has more stricter control over this. But then do farmers perhaps need more education on this and how to contain the foot and mouth disease, how to identify perhaps the signs and symptoms, and what to do immediately once you've identified that one of your animals has foot and mouth disease?
Yeah, no, very much. We need to spread the information much wider and also consistently, and also with the common message, not just diverting messages or differing messages. You know, Namibia is predominantly producing livestock, and one of the hindering factors in livestock farming is diseases. So most farmers, as we travel around, they complain about livestock diseases. There are certain diseases that farmers can control themselves. There are those that the state have to control, that farmers should report. Yeah, so farmers are aware of diseases, and also they are aware of FMT, especially in the risky areas. There are farmers that want to market their animals, but then they are restricted because of that particular disease. So they are aware of FMT. And the fact that we have a red line in the country, so the red line issue has been debated over many years,
mm-hmm.
so people know why the red line is there. Even though there are some differing views, but the purpose is for disease control. So farmers are aware of the issues that we are facing with regard to livestock diseases. It's just that now they are given the climate and different, you know, things happening in the continent, like in Africa or Southern Africa. The climate is all these things. There are also diseases coming up, or the spread of diseases is also now becoming too much. So it's a matter of just re-emphasizing and strengthening the information dissemination system that we have in the country. We do have to really keep the farmers updated with this particular disease and any other outbreak. We had COVID here. We had Lambi skin disease as well in livestock. So farmers are aware. We just have to keep them updated all the time.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yeah.
Mm. But what is your advice? Perhaps, I don't know, for instance, right now, we were to consult Mr. Erastus Ngaruka on how perhaps South Africa can go about trying to contain this disease. I'm certain that they've tried many different areas in trying to actually contain it, and they've produced a vaccine now. What would be your advice?
I think for South Africa, they need to really disseminate information very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, South Africa is very huge, or the population is very huge. Yeah, not every farmer will have access to information, and people have different livelihoods, and some or many of them are dependent on livestock. So for as long as they move livestock, they don't care what the neighbor would feel and so forth. For as long as they just maintain their livelihoods through whatever means, selling a livestock to a neighbor or to a livestock from an infected area to another area that is clean, for family or cultural purposes. So to them, maybe that could have been the case. But now that it's impacting on the economy, the national economy, and even the household economy, so obviously South Africa need to re-engineer the message and, again, spread the message widely enough. Show the farmers the impact. Even, you know, farmers sometimes want to see, if you just talk things on a higher level to say, no, it will affect our economy, it will cripple our export and stuff. Farmers need to know what impact does it have on that, in the remote area, the remotest area.
Mm.
But in any case, the fact that they have come up with a vaccine, it's very nice for us, even the neighboring countries. they just have to subsidize the vaccine, or in fact, it's a state-controlled disease. They need to really go out there, educate the farmers, and also vaccinate the animals. And again, work with the neighboring countries like Namibia and Botswana and others, at least to make sure that if there are areas bordering Namibia, for example, if you look at the Northern Cape, the two governments should really work together, even if it means Namibian personnel can also go into South Africa to help them fight the disease and so forth. I think that will do. And again, they need to rework their livestock traceability system, their livestock disease control protocols, probably collaborate with the Namibian government or Namibian institutions to on how to go about it. Even though we are a small country, we are able to manage one or few things. I think on a larger scale, South Africa need to copy what Namibia does as well.
Interesting. That's a very strong point out there. Now, considering that this FMD has triggered or restricted banned from international, major regional and international markets of South Africa, China being one of them and Zimbabwe also being one of them, is this the can Namibia perhaps seize this opportunity to now fill in the gap for where South Africa is not able to import to them anymore, to export to them anymore? Can Namibia perhaps take up that opportunity, and perhaps China gets to export from Namibia, import from Namibia more?
Yeah, very much, because the past 5 years, South Africa have been battling with FMD, and they have lost some export markets, international markets. So, and Namibia have been maintaining the European Union, the UK, the Norway markets, and so forth. And again, they have opened the US market, and we have also opened the Chinese markets. So it's an opportunity that is existing already, based on what happened previously with South African FMD status. So we just need to keep our country clean in terms of FMD and maintain those markets. And we are also busy exploring markets. If in case those Chinese or EU market closes due to FMD, at least we must be able to take our livestock somewhere else where probably will not have much to lose in terms of export. So it's an opportunity for us. We really need to make sure that we prove to the world that we are able to contain the disease or even prevent the disease from entering the free zones. Just like what we have been doing by managing the disease in the northern regions.
Indeed.
Yeah, so it's an opportunity.
Okay.
And again, an opportunity for farmers themselves to really try their best to satisfy this market through production, improving their production techniques. Yeah. But now it's a risk. We are in a risk. So we also need to make sure we prepare ourselves to defend.
To mitigate.
Okay.
Mr. Erastus Ngaruka, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Though you had it from another farmer, Erastus Ngaruka, and knows much to do with farming. Of course, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is on the Reader News Analysis. We'll be back with yet more. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo IGL FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko IGL FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa.
Welcome back. Now joining me yet big in studio is Prof. Marvin Arab from Vilvicha University. A very good afternoon to you, Prof, and welcome back.
Good afternoon, ma'am, and once again, thanks for having me.
Now, Prof, indeed, Vilvicha University has become a household name in Namibia. Can you tell us more about the programs currently open for applications within the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education?
Certainly. As the name suggests, the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education, we have got three schools under this faculty, which is the School of Commerce, School of Law, and School of Education. Now, for those interested in commerce, we have certificate, diploma, and a Bachelor of Science, both in project management as well as supply chain management. In the School of Law, we are offering an undergraduate diploma in legal studies as well as a Bachelor of Laws, LLB. For education, we have a bachelor's degree for both senior primary as well as senior secondary, majoring solely in math and science.
Now, we notice a strong focus on postgraduate studies this year. Who should be looking at these programs?
Especially since the university graduated its first postgraduate student cohort during our November 2025 graduation ceremony last year, we are very proud of our advanced offerings. We have a postgraduate diploma in business administration, higher education, as well as monitoring and evaluation. In the similar field, we also have a Master's of Science in Project Management, Higher Education, as well as monitoring and evaluation. Now, these programs are a perfect fit for professionals looking to climb the corporate ladder or just to specialize in their specific field of study at undergraduate level.
Interesting. Prof, what is the study or the mode of study of those courses?
Okay, so generally we have got face-to-face, online, and distance mode of study. Those are the traditional different modes of study. But in terms of Vilvicha University, especially under the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education, all our programs are offered on a blended mode, which means that there's a balance between face-to-face and online modes of study. So classes are offered on face-to-face as well as online classes. And ideally, our postgraduate programs are offered in the evening. So we have understand that these are mostly working professionals, and during the course of the day, they might be engaged otherwise. So it's very much flexible, blended mode with the opportunity of being offered evening so that they can attend to their normal daily activities during the day, and then they can still continue with their studies in the evening.
What about duration? What is the duration of your programs?
Okay. Normally, in the Namibian context, we look at the NQF level because the NQF level will ideally inform you the duration of the program. Now, the certificate programs are only 1 year because it's on NQF level 4, and whereas the diploma programs are 2 years because they are on NQF level 5. Our bachelor's degrees are honors programs, and they span over the period of 4 years, with the exception of the Bachelor of Law, because of its comprehensive and complex nature, it is offered or spent over the period of 5 years. Equally so, our postgraduate diplomas are only 1 year on NQF level 8, whereas the master's programs are generally over the period of 2 years, including the research component. And all master's programs are on NQF level 9. So certificate, 1 year, diplomas, 2 years, bachelor, which are also the honors programs, 4 years, with the exception of law, which is now 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Postgraduate diplomas, 1 year, and the master's programs are over the period of 2 years of study.
Interesting. Now, Prof, you have recently extended your deadlines. What are the key dates and costs that listeners need to know?
Okay, so we have extended our application deadline. So initially, we were supposed to end our applications at the end of January, but now applications have been extended. Both the application as well as the registration deadline is now set to end on the 28th of February, and the application fee is $230. So people have still time to make their way either to our website or to visit our campuses, if they are struggling on the with the online application, I know not all of us are well versed with the online era. So you can either go online or they can visit our nearest campuses throughout the country, and they can submit their application accompanied by a payment of a minimum amount of $230 million. Mm-hmm. And then once they get the application status, they can then register.
Okay. Now, how can a prospective student apply right now? And what should they perhaps be readily available on their hands as they do the application?
Okay, the easiest way is to visit our website, www.wu.edu.na. And when you get to the website, you just go where it says application, and then you do the online application. And this application must be accompanied, like I said earlier, by a payment of $230 million. Normally, you can just EFT, or if you are unable to EFT, you can just visit one of the nearest campuses, and then you can swipe the $230 million. Unfortunately, we do not accept cash payment. So it's either by using electronic funds transfer, or you can swipe at the nearest campuses. Once you have done that and you have submitted, you have completed the application online, you simply just upload the proof of payment and all your relevant documents. And with those documents, we refer to your ID or your passport, and your qualification, your K-12 certificate, and all the required documents that will help us to identify you as an applicant.
Mm-hmm.
And importantly, we also welcome international students into our program. I've just been looking at one of the applications that we have received from a foreign national. So we are accepting applications from international students across the globe.
Mm-hmm. Prof. Marvin, if someone is tuned in right now and is following the conversation and has a specific question about their documents or perhaps campus location or maybe how they can actually reach you and ask other questions that you have not been able to touch on right now, how can they perhaps reach you?
Okay, so we have our two cell phone numbers that they can contact us at. For general admission inquiries, they can call us at 081-403-6406, that is 081-403-6406, or they can kindly send us a WhatsApp at 081-146-1067. The WhatsApp at 081-146-1067. And they can also drop us an email at admission@wu.edu.na. That is admission@wu.edu.na. And in extreme circumstances, we are also very much assisting those communications and comments that we are receiving on any of our social media platforms. So they can also just, if they are unable to reach us through the platforms that I've just mentioned, they can also reach out to us, whether it's on Facebook, or whether it's on Instagram and so forth, and our marketing team will be readily available to assist them.
Okay. Prof. Marvin, thank you so much for making time for us right here on The Reader.
Thank you very much for having me, ma'am.
Okay. And there we had it from Prof. Marvin Awarab, that is the Dean of Dean for Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education at the Dulwich University. Let's now pause here and we'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. Now in other news, FNB Namibia earlier today launched their latest product, for community and group banking, WeSave. Now, the new facility will utilize the community aspects for savings and investment purposes, which in turn will allow savings by a collective to grow their investment for various needs that will arise from everyday needs. Now, speaking at the event is Mr. Lovindao, CEO for FNB Retail Namibia, and he said this is not a new concept, but the product fits into the activities that have been seen in society, like Stockvilles and more. Let's now take a listen to him.
Microphones here. That says if you want to go fast, go alone, and if you want to go far, go together. So this proverb is actually what brings us here today. Across the continent, especially here in Namibia, we understand the power of community. We understand the fact that we raise our children together. We celebrate births. We celebrate weddings. We go through hardships together as well. When somebody is sick, when somebody passes on, this is part of who we are as a collective. Today, it's in that same spirit of community and togetherness that we're here to launch a product rooted in a culture of tradition. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to the launch of WeSave. WeSave is an account inspired by African togetherness, and it's designed to help people save collectively towards a common goal. WeSave is not new to us. It's not new to the African market. It's inspired by this Southern African tradition of communal savings. I think all of us are aware of the Stockvel concept. That's been along for quite some time. It's a long-standing practice that's been carried across many generations here in Africa. So what is new about how we have chosen to honor and participate in this tradition? Well, with WeSave, FNB Namibia is formalizing a practice that already exists while giving our customers a secure, digital, and interest-bearing platform to save together. And I think that's very important, and that's quite critical for the time that we find ourselves economically as a country. It's a solution designed not in the boardroom alone, but shaped by how people actually live, how they save, and how we support one another in our normal everyday lives. At FN, we believe that innovation is not just about creating products for the sake of products. It's also about truly listening to our customers and responding to them with solutions that improve financial well-being. And WeSave is an expression. We are committed, obviously, as well, to meeting the needs of our customers and honoring their realities. And we want to work with them as they build more secure financial futures together. At its core, WeSave is about financial inclusion, and the critical item about financial inclusion is that having a bank account does not count as financial inclusion. It's about utilization. Financial inclusion is about removing barriers and simplifying processes and creating real opportunities for Namibians to actively participate in the formal economy.
And that was CEO for FNB Retail Namibia, Mbo Lovindao. Now, answering on the trends of the new product, Ziggy Mwinyo, head of investment for FNB Retail Namibia, explained that there are key differences between this new product and the existing ones. Let's take a listen to Ziggy Mwinyo.
This is basically a group savings account. It allows multiple individuals to save together for a common purpose. It allows transparency, a secure way of banking, and also at the same time you are able to earn interest on your savings. It is not an individual account, it's a group savings account, but it's more a formalized way of saving. We have basically added structures into this product to allow people to be, or members within a group savings account, to be protected, secure, and be able to confidently.
And with that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On the Radar News Analysis. We'll be back with news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushendife nawa nukumuna oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia, let's start off in South Africa, in regards to the Indaba, mining Indaba, which focuses on mining technologies.
So it's day two of the Investing in African Mining Indaba at the International Convention Center in Cape Town. The gathering is attended by mining professionals, investors, and industry leaders who are seeking to take advantage of vast opportunities in African mining. SABC News economics reporter Katleho Lehori is watching this gathering and joins us now live from Cape Town. And Katleho, it's an opportunity, I suppose, to also showcase the best of what Cape Town has to offer with different exhibitions from entrepreneurs who are also present there.
Most definitely. A very good morning to you, Ayanda, and to our viewers at home. You find us in the Women's Hub. This is the Women in Mining Hub. They are here. They are adding their voice and they're looking to break barriers in terms of women in mining and some of the developments here. So you see them just already strategizing, Ayanda, and just looking into the day as to the deals and the partnerships that will come from this Investing in African Mining in Indaba. And you see that this is something that also was mentioned yesterday by the keynote speaker. This will be Hakainde Hichilema, the Zambian president, who spoke about the issue of leaving no one behind, including women. So they are here. They are looking to add their voice in terms of what can be done. But today, expecting various of speakers to come through as well to ensure that they move this theme forward, the theme being stronger together, progress through partnerships. And we're going to be seeing most of them coming through and giving us a sense of how then they are looking to move some of these conversations forward, especially when you talk about issues of critical minerals, when you talk about issues of beneficiation. They're talking about ensuring as well that there's exploration that takes place here, and they give make sense to the issue of the G20 framework on critical minerals, especially that we have here at home. I'm going to bring into the conversation with us one of the women leading this association, Sawima, who will be joining us now, Mamfezeka. Thank you very much for joining us on the SABC. You're really here as women. You don't want to be left behind. And you are in the mining sector as well. And you're adding your voice where this mining endeavor is concerned. Welcome to the SABC, Mama. Just give us a sense of how we find Sawima here today.
Very much, Katleho. Sawima is part of the women that are here at the African Mining Endeavor 2026. We are here to ensure that women are not left behind. We are here to ensure that women participate actively so within the mining industry. We are here to ensure that the legislation and policies that and the decisions that are taken here are going to favor women, and women will have a voice. Women will also benefit from the mining of the African minerals and commodities.
What are the issues that you've been going through as women in the mining sector? Maybe that you also want to be ventilated here. Some of those, especially emanating here from at home in South Africa, because that is where we find you moving all the way into the continent.
The problem that we have is access to funding. Government is supporting women with funding, but the funding is not aligned with the mining rights and the mining permits. And the issue is that the funding that we get, you would find that most women are starting as small-scale miners. And IDC does not fund small-scale miners because the small-scale mining permit is short-lived. Only 2 years, extended for 3 years, and IDC does not fund those. The majority of women, they start there. And you'd find that even the application process is quite expensive. Mining is capital-intensive industry. The permits are quite expensive. There are a lot of regulation that we have to comply for you to get the permit. And even after you've got the permit, there are licenses that you must get before you start the actual mining. So you'd find that you'd have a shortfall even before you start mining. We are already in debt.
Mama, we're hoping that these conversations will really move us forward. And these are some of the issues that the ministers, they are also here.
Let's now listen to Safer Internet Day highlights. Youth online safety.
Today being the second Tuesday of February, the world observes a Safer Internet Day. And this day is, of course, aimed at promoting safer, more responsible, and more inclusive internet usage for everyone, especially children and young people. Now, it's observed worldwide on the second Tuesday of February. And this day is not just about the risks, but also about empowering users to participate confidently and safely in the digital world. Let's cross now to SABC News parliamentary reporter Mkokeli Bandla. He's joined by the Minister of Communication, Tsoli Malatsi, to talk to us about the Safer Internet Day. Mkokeli, good morning once more, and it's over to you.
Good morning to you, Sakina, and also to our viewers at home. Indeed, we are joined by the Minister of Digital Technologies and Communications, Tsoli Malatsi, to talk more on this particular day, the Internet Safety Day worldwide. Minister, if you can quickly tell us the importance and significance of International Internet Safety Day, particularly in the South African context. Yeah.
Thank you so much, and good morning to the SABC viewers. Look, Safer Internet Day began over, you know, a couple of years ago. It's being celebrated or commemorated in over 180 countries. And the purpose of that is to bring awareness about, you know, unsafe behavior on the internet, harmful content on the internet, and how we can make the internet a productive space. I think we live in a time and age where the use of technologies has their own risks, unique in terms of, you know, child inappropriate content or the spread of pornographic content on the internet. You look at the rise of cyberbullying. You look at, you know, misinformation and disinformation and the risk that they put children in. And it is important to raise awareness about this risk so that we can empower our children with the knowledge of being able to identify these wrongs, but also empower teachers, parents, and even society about how to overcome this risk so that we can reduce and hopefully get to a space where we eliminate, you know, unethical, dangerous, wrongful behavior on the internet so that it can be a productive space that people can use for entertainment, for online learning, they can use for digital entrepreneurship and use it for things that will help grow the economy and grow society. The development of the internet also, particularly in the age of artificial intelligence, it does not wait for our children to develop. It's actually developing at a very fast pace. How do we then advise the parents at home and also the young ones that are exposed now to artificial intelligence and also the development of the internet?
Yeah, and you are absolutely right. I mean, when you look in terms of just the spread of AI-generated content, it's even to well-educated people, even to technologically savvy people, you still often struggle to separate what is authentic towards what is inauthentic. So that is why a large focus of our work around awareness and also capacitation is, you know, working together with the Films and Publications Board to put interventions that will allow for, you know, AI-generated content to have that watermarking so people are aware what kind of content they are interfacing with. And secondly, to empower our population with digital skills. You know, the basic digital skills that will allow whether you are young, you're middle-aged, or you're considered very old, to at least have the basic tools that enable you to do this. I mean, we've got an entity called NEMISA that offers free online courses. You know, there are a lot of private players also in the space that offer, you know, digital skills, free online courses to help empower our society. But I also think another component which is very important is what the social media platforms can do in enhancing self-regulation so that they put the guardrails in place, for instance, to make sure that children don't get to access content they shouldn't be accessing that could be harmful to them. Globally, the conversation is around looking at interventions such as, you know, age verification, identity verification, and facial recognition tools so that you don't have underage children using fake profiles to be on platforms that they are not supposed to be.
Talking about the safety of internet use, also the pros and cons that come with that one, what can you say when it comes to those questions?
Sorry, just repeat that again.
Yeah. The safety, yeah. Because the theme is focusing on safety use. Yes, what can you say about that? Also, the development of the internet.
Yeah, look, the internet at its foundation was a source of connecting people to the world outside of their boundaries, right? But we don't live in an ideal world. We don't live in a perfect world. There are opportunistic, nefarious elements that seek, you know, to manipulate people's lack of digital skills, people's lack of knowledge about navigating the internet for their own ends. And they do so lucratively, you know, be it financial scamming, be it selling, you know, fake products, and be it luring children and even grooming children. And that's why part of the work that the Films and Publication Board is doing is being much more stringent on age-restricted content and also working with law enforcement authorities, providing a what we call content analysis service in cases of, you know, child abuse and in cases of, you know, even human trafficking. And what the Films and Publication Board has been able to do in the 2024-2025 financial year, they provided support to South African Police Service in over 25 cases, and they've gotten convictions in some of those. This year, it's already at over, I mean, this financial year, already over 13 cases. And we are seeing more stronger penalties, including 20-year sentences being imposed on pedophiles and people who groom young children by luring them, abusing the internet.
Thank you, Minister. There you have it, Sakina, the Minister of Digital Technologies and Communications, Solly Malatsi, speaking on international internet safety.
Meanwhile, 480 hectares of land have been set aside for solar projects in Zambia.
A delegation of investors from the United Arab Emirates is in Zambia, exploring investment opportunities in key sectors of the economy. SGC Investment Company Limited has shown strong interest in Zambia's renewable energy sector. The UAE-based company is particularly focused on developing 500 megawatts of solar power in Zambia. This announcement was made during a meeting with local government and rural development minister Gift Sialuvalo.
We're obviously interested in oil and gas also sector, mining, telecom, smart low-cost housing. We also, since we are FDI partners for the countries, we also bring in the respective technologies as well. Solar energy, as we've anyways mentioned.
Speaking at the meeting, Mr. Sialubalo provided an update on the progress of the Presidential Solar Energy Initiative.
We came up with an idea through the Presidential Constituents Initiative to come up with solar grids in all the 116 parliamentary constituents. Now you're coming to also look at these opportunities. It gives us hope. About 408 hectares of land already secured in all the 116 districts. Part of it, working in collaboration with you, can be utilized to also address the 500 megawatts that you intend to invest in the country.
The meeting marked a significant step in strengthening Zambia's relationship with the UAE, opening the door to increased collaboration in energy, mining, and infrastructure. As Zambia continues its efforts to diversify its energy mix, the engagement with the SGC Investment Limited represents a promising development for the country's renewable energy future. Doreen Chembe, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Zambia has attracted $12 billion US dollars mining investment. That is according to President Hakainde Hichilema.
The 2026 mining endeavor has opened in Cape Town, South Africa, with a strong message of partnership other than competition to harness the resources of the continent. With 10,000 delegates in attendance, President Hakainde Hichilema used the opportunity to highlight the major reforms that the country has implemented in the sector.
We inherited, as the minister said, a declining economy, growing at minus 2.8% GDP. Not long ago, just 4 years ago. Now we are 4.5 years thereabout incumbent. And therefore, we launched what we called disciplined reforms. Clarity, discipline of execution, consistency. Very important. Now, these reforms are bearing fruit. There's no question about it. We are doing high-resolution geophysical survey for the first time in 50 years in our country. And we're doing it at a national level. And the government is paying for that. We did not want to go and ask somebody to assist us. We said we walk the talk.
The president, who delivered a keynote address, showcased the benefits of the reforms in the past 4 years.
First Quantum Minerals is invested in the Kansanshi mine, S3, $1.25 billion. $1.25 billion. Barrick Gold is Lumana. They've invested in a super pit expansion, $2 billion. Mopani recapitalization, $1.1 billion. Concola Copper Mines, I talked about it, $1.25 billion.
In line with this year's theme, the president re-echoed the need for partnership.
I think it's important for the world to recognize that Africa has a lot to offer to the world's future, especially if you're talking about transition. And you know the transition I'm talking about, to be more greener. But we have to walk a path, not smooth, but one that needs to understand where we were, where we are, where we are going. So, we hold resources for the globe as well. Yes, resources create prosperity when unlocked through, once again, strategic partnerships.
And the president urged the continent to change the narrative over the International Monetary Funds program.
Africa must change this narrative that the IMF will construct a program for us in our countries. We must construct the programs and ask the IMF to support us in our programs. And this president never shied away from the risk of being unpopular with the voters when we said this is the Zambia program with the IMF, not the IMF program with Zambia. And we maintained that narrative and made the IMF understand that. And we had a 38-month program, December We concluded that program with 6 reviews, and we passed all the reviews in that 38-month program. Attitude, mindset.
Area, South Africa's Minister of Minerals and Petroleum Resources urged the continent to embrace value addition to resources.
Let's invest in science, let's invest in innovation. If we do that, we're going to discover the usefulness of every mineral. And I've come to a conclusion that every mineral is critical. Every mineral is critical. So this thing of critical minerals is a nice to have. But a mineral is critical everywhere because everything you have here, you either grow it or you mine it.
The Indaba is being held under the theme, Stronger Together, Progress Through Partnerships. Mercy Mwepa, ZNBC News, Cape Town, South Africa.
Ethiopia earns nearly $1.5 billion US dollars from industrial parks.
Let's start the hour in Ethiopia, where the government is working to ensure the success of its numerous industrial parks. Over half of the country's export earnings in manufacturing are coming from firms based in these zones, many of which were developed quite recently using a fair bit of debt. Despite the success so far, experts point out that the returns so far are simply not strong enough to be able to service that debt. Becca Atoma starts us off from Addis Ababa.
Over the past decade, Ethiopia has heavily invested in developing and expanding industrial parks as a means to attract foreign direct investment and fuel manufacturing and export-led growth. Today, the country has more than 20 industrial parks and special economic zones, which together produce over half of the country's manufactured exports.
Bole Lemmi Special Economic Zone on the outskirts of Addis Ababa is one of Ethiopia's key manufacturing hubs, hosting more than 35 factories. One of them is Galila Manufacturing PLC, a shoemaker with the capacity to produce 2,000 partially handmade export quality shoes.
I started by preparing raw materials. Over time, I learned from senior colleagues and developed the skills to operate this machine. Now I work independently. Factories like these don't just provide jobs. They also teach valuable skills. They also pay better than many other factories, and I believe I benefit in many ways.
Industrial parks and special economic zones are becoming central to Ethiopia's manufacturing drive, according to the Industrial Parks Development Corporation, which administers 14 industrial parks and special economic zones.
We have more than 300 investors, where 40% of them are foreign direct investment, especially from China, India, and other countries, where we are able to export more than 1.5 billion USD dollars of worth of exports from these industrial parks. We created tens of thousands of jobs. Currently, we have close to 90,000 employees in our parks, active employment, that means. So in the past 6 months, we were able to export around 112 million USD worth of goods to US, to Europe, and other countries. So if you consider the export share, it's more than half of the overall the export from the manufacturing sector.
Ethiopia's industrial parks development was largely financed through external funding, and the Industrial Parks Development Corporation says they are now generating positive results that can help repay those loans.
The investment was huge, so this was financed by different financial institutions, loan from these institutions. So we are expected to pay that loan through renting and leasing of our land for investors. In that sense, we are doing a good job now. In the past 2-3 years, we have a positive growth.
Some experts, however, disagree. They say that while industrial parks are boosting the economy, they are not yet earning enough to repay their loans, leading to a change in the government's borrowing strategy.
The government has clearly announced since the homegrown economic reform program started that it's not going to take non-concessional lending because mostly the non-concessional lending that came, for example, for industrial park development and others, did not really produce the return it needed to pay back the commercial loans in time, which put a strain on the overall debt sustainability of the country.
Across Africa, development financing patterns are shifting, with reports showing a sharp rise in multilateral lending.
Increasingly, countries, as when they were bilaterally, you know, going into the commercial loans, that was very, you know, damaging to their debt sustainability. So they sort of reverted back to more concessional. Not, I would not say they don't want bilateral lending. If a bilateral, you know, creditor is willing to make the loan concessional, of course they would be happy to take that loan. They don't have anything necessarily against the bilateral, the loan being bilateral.
Dr. Tedros lauds Ethiopia for shifting focus from the lender to the type of loan. Beka Atoma, CGTN, Addis Ababa.
Over the past year, technological advances in artificial intelligence have accelerated, driven by factors such as increased computing power.
Artificial intelligence is already transforming the world. For the African continent, the challenge is how to leverage AI to create opportunity and deliver real benefits for its people.
It's against this backdrop that the Nairobi AI Forum 2026, co-hosted by the governments of Kenya and Italy and the United Nations Development Programme, is taking place in Kenya's capital. The focus is on how to connect AI infrastructure to innovators, builders and governments across the continent to accelerate development.
And so how do we ensure that Africa begins not just to be a passive participant in artificial intelligence, but becomes an active builder and developer? And this is why this forum is important.
Thigo says one particular challenge Africa is facing is data center capacity. The continent has 1% global data capacity, with half of it in South Africa. Other challenges include financing and sovereignty, which touch on the ability of a state or entity to develop and control AI tech.
Designing partnerships is essential if we truly want innovation to translate into inclusive and sustainable development.
Across Africa, AI is driving innovation in various sectors, including health and agriculture. Experts say its full potential can be harnessed to benefit the masses.
AI is not a sector add-on. It is a systemic enabler of development outcome and social impact. Presented.
During interactive sessions, fears of job losses to AI were allayed, with keynote speakers saying new positions will be created. Instead, focus should be on training to meet the new realities in the job sector. The forum ends on Tuesday. Robert Nagila, CGTN.
China rolls out robot cops in the cities to push humanoid robots in daily life.
At nearly 6 feet tall, the newest police recruit on patrol in the city of Wuhu commands attention, less because of the uniform than the 6 high-definition cameras and advanced sensors under that hat that allow the AI-powered robot called R001 to manage the flow of traffic and people in the streets and around the clock. It looks just like a real person at first sight, says this pedestrian. Real-life robocops like this have been rolled out in other Chinese cities, too, including...
Efilo shisho, utalikulandula konave wayuk.
ekwashili palekolo marwendo paiwano kupitila mo NHB. Watupa telekomesho ekwashili palekolo afika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo da Namibia, moshi joshe tukeshe, kuyanja oma kwa fo unamiti enashane filo shisholo pa ulumo mumbu. Kwa voveli ponje yo shilongo, shijoshi topo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis moule ominute dishonailela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo ponje yo shilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkodana Dengue program brought to you by Eloise Shimi. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place.